The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International.
This is a Comics League International special because, you know, as fates turned out, Captain America Civil War had recently come out. And then this morning, I got a message from a very good friend who has free time to talk about movies. What's up, Derek?
What is up with you, Brent Thomas?
I finally, well, like... Captain America, that was up. I'm really excited because I actually got to see this movie before most people in the States did.
Yeah, and that's sort of out of the ordinary, right?
Yeah, because you know I'm here in Japan and like Deadpool, mm-hmm. Still not out in Japan.
Weird.
Yeah. Normally, like a lucky day is when the movies get released at the same time. Normal is when they're out a couple of months after they came out in the States, and with Captain America, I got to see it like a week beforehand, which was great for kind of bragging rights, but it also meant like I saw it and was like I want to talk about this movie, but hardly anyone I know has actually seen it.
Well, I've seen it, Brent. You can tell me about it.
It was really good.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Okay, bye. Talk to you later.
Good talk. Good talk.
Tune in next week for...
Yeah, especially compared to, you know, sort of the wet sandwich that was Age of Ultron.
Yeah. Now, I don't... So I guess why don't we start there a little bit, because Age of Ultron was a very forgettable Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a puzzle piece of the blue sky, and it's just one of those standard blue ones that, yeah, it's there and it adds to the total picture, but it doesn't really do anything by itself except form a whole if you take it away.
Yeah, especially when you kind of compare Civil War with just they did a really good job of continuing all the storylines that are running in the MCU. They gave callbacks to the very first Captain America movie, which they didn't even direct. The Russo brothers, is who, and the writers of the film, whose names I don't know, nor do I care.
Christopher Marcus wrote this most recent one, The Civil War.
And just like all the careful thought process they put into every character's, like what their goal was and the central conflict. I mean, Black Widow beat more ass in the first like 5 minutes of this movie than all of Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Like, had more agency. Like, it took a grenade to really slow her down at all in the first few minutes of Civil War. But yeah, I do like that Joss Whedon finally did come out and give his official mea culpa for Age of Ultron. He's like, sorry, dudes. Sorry.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't like have a press conference or anything, but you know, at a convention, or I think he was on a podcast or something like that. This is all apocryphal, but no, he did come out and say that, like, yeah, there was a lot of factors, like, you know, he had the studio up his butt and he was trying to do too many things, but ultimately he took responsibilities. Like, it was my show. I failed. Mm-hmm. Like, it got away from me. I failed. I'm sorry.
Now
he's kind of a broken man since finishing that movie. Like, he hasn't done anything.
Yeah. Is this going to be one of those times where he just kind of disappears for about a couple of years and then comes back with Dollhouse 2?
Yeah, I think so.
Now, I was listening to another podcast, and they had an interesting theory that I'm going to regurgitate and hopefully try and sound smart, is that one of the reasons that maybe the Russo brothers are succeeding in an arena where Joss Whedon struggled. I don't want to say failed, because, you know, I mean, there's still the first Avengers, super fun, Age of Ultron...
There's parts of that movie I like.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a bad movie, but it's just, it's underwhelming compared to what we wanted. It failed to live up to the expectations set by the first Avengers.
Right, which, there is an argument to be made, like, what could live up to the expectations after the first Avengers movie?
Yeah, yeah. But one of the reasons people are saying that maybe, and it was in the one of the iFanboy podcasts, so if... For name recognition, there you go, is that maybe since, you know, with the Russo brothers, they kind of, cut their teeth on television. Through, you know, episodes of Community, through episodes of Arrested Development, and the speculation being that with television, it is much more of a, of kind of a top-down system, where, like, the producers kind of set the tone and the directors kind of fall into place there. So it's less of an auteur vision, which is what you could probably argue that Joss Whedon may have been used to. You know, and so maybe there was just less difficulty in getting... In incorporating the visions of the producers into the visions of that they wanted to present. You know, just as a theory.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think there's perhaps some validity.
And probably some oversimplification as well, but...
Yeah. I mean, Joss Whedon also came up in the TV world, so... And we think of him now as this auteur who does whatever he wants, but he wasn't always that way. Watching them, like, this movie, like, that's my one thing, one of my few quibbles with the movie is, like, this was really Avengers 3. It's not really a Captain America movie.
Yeah.
It's Avengers 3 in all but name. It's a direct sequel to Age of Ultron and a direct sequel to The Winter Soldier. Mm. And it does kind of have a, kind of a split personality at times as a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's trying to kind of serving both masters, but it did it so well, and there was so much like craftsmanship and care given to every part of it that, like, yeah, you can pick it apart and say, well, not great cinema, but who cares? It was well executed. It was fun. It didn't offend me. It didn't make me feel stupid. I was telling you this earlier. I gasped in unironic childlike wonder when Giant Man happened, because I didn't expect that at all. Like, I mean, Spider-Man was there, and we can talk about it in a minute, because I know everyone's all excited about Spider-Man. But Spider-Man was there, and he was really fun, but I expected Spider-Man to be there. And I expected him to be really fun. Billions of dollars are riding on Spider-Man being really fun. But the moment of Giant Man, I didn't expect that, and it made me so happy. So happy.
Yeah, I think somewhere the internet, and I tried to go, after watching the first trailer that showed Spider-Man, I'll admit, I was weak, and I gave in, and I watched that. And, like, while I was watching, I was like, I shouldn't be watching this, because it's giving way too much of the movie away. And then I just went into, like, a self-imposed blackout when it came to anything, including Captain America in it. But even with that, somehow just... through existing and looking at the internet, I'd heard, like, psst, Paul Rudd's gonna be Giant Man as well. And even though I'd forgotten it, like, the moment he was like, I've got something, I was like, oh, right. So I didn't get quite the gasp of glee, but rather,
I'm so sorry for you. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I knew Ant-Man was gonna be in the movie, and I was like, okay, cool, I like Ant-Man, I like Paul Rudd, I'm excited. Yeah. And then he's there, and he's fun, and he's, you know, doing his Ant-Man thing. But then when he was like, I'm going to try a thing, I was like, what is it? Was he talking about? And I was like, oh my God, it's happening! It's happening! Like, yeah, it was just like, it was something I just didn't expect that made me so happy. And that's really hard to have happen in movies now.
Yeah.
Like, you have to actively hide from the information.
And you have to be good at it. You have to be really good at hiding from information from movies to not learn too much about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so, and I think not only could that scene promote that sense of glee that you're talking about, but the way it was done in the film, it was done with a sense of glee.
Like, oh yeah, that was very much like, let's put on park all of the serious themes of this film. It's, you paid your money.
Yeah.
It's time to watch the superheroes punch each other.
Yeah.
You paid your money. It's time for the splash page. Woo-hoo! Let's do it. And let's do it really, really well. All those fight scenes were so well choreographed.
Oh my goodness.
I was never confused. Like, and also the para, like the way each character fought and who they chose to fight in what order. Yep. Like, I love how, like, Black Panther, who was so good,
just Chadwick Boseman, like just how they had him move and the physicality of him looking so different from the other characters was really impressive.
Yeah, and also he only fights Bucky unless someone else gets in his way.
Yeah,
like he's totally laser focused on Bucky.
Yeah,
all the time. So so what do we, how do we want to do this? Do we just want to just take turns saying what we liked, or do we want to like pick it apart a little bit, or how do you want to approach this, Brent?
Oh man, that's a scary question, because you know, why don't we start off here's something that really surprised me in the movie.
Okay.
Because I guess let's start there. Because if we just start listing the things we liked in it, we'll get lost.
Okay. Yeah. Things that we were unexpected or surprised by. Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and this is going to be one of those things that I'm going to say, and chances are you're just going to be like, "How did you miss that? That was incredibly telegraphed." The entire thing. And by the way, I know it says it right up there in, you know, before the show even starts, we tell you there's going to be spoilers in whatever we talk about, but there's going to be some spoilers. So spoilers, boom. I completely blanked over the fact in this movie about how it was Bucky that killed Stark's parents. Like,
yeah.
Like until they just kind of took the blanket off and were like, by the way, you know that thing we told you that happened at the very beginning of the movie, and then the next scene was Tony Stark being like, my parents died that night in a car crash, blah blah blah. You know how he showed you those two scenes back to back? That is what happened. Like somehow, like,
no, I didn't get it either.
Yeah,
and I was totally floored by that. I was like, "What?"
And look, like the moment they showed us that final piece, I was like, "That? How did you show?" But I didn't. What? That's wow! Like it, and I'm trying to figure out if it's because it doesn't feel like it's a mystery. Like once it's a revelation, it doesn't feel like they were going out of their way to necessarily hide it.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I don't know, they managed to make the movie so skillfully that even though in retrospect that is entirely obvious, that it is still surprising because it's just, hey, check it out. Here's some spectacle for you to get caught up in while we're also showing you the fundamental pieces that will result the, that will, this movie will, what, culminate in? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah. Well, it's amazing because it's so clever because they get you really focused on the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
The thing in the back of the truck. Like, oh, what's that stuff?
Yeah.
You're really focused on, what's that stuff? And then you find out that stuff was used to make super soldiers. You're like, okay, end of the movie. They're fighting super soldiers. It's happening. And then you get to the end of the movie. No. He killed him.
Yeah.
Zemo shot him in the head.
Because super soldiers.
Like, what a wonderful, like, reversal.
Mm-hmm.
Of expectations. I think
the puppies think that was like, don't spoil the ending, dude.
No, we haven't seen it yet on dog TV.
Oh. Yeah, and then to have the ultimate, you know, revelation of, yeah, Bucky killed the Starks and it's there, just really knocked me on my butt.
Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah. I guess it's your turn if you had a big surprise.
I think I was surprised by how funny the movie was, especially once it got into, like, the second act. Like, yeah. I want a whole movie that's just Steve and Bucky and Falcon just cruising around in that little bug. You know, just lots of, like, arguing and stopping to get food.
Yeah,
and,
I would love to see them go through a drive-thru.
I would like a milkshake, please. No, you're lactose intolerant, Bucky. You forgot because you're an assassin now.
Why does Bucky always have to take so long to order? oh, man.
Oh, those are your headphones?
Hi.
Me and Brent are talking about Civil War for this podcast.
And I guess I'll leave the room.
Has she not seen Civil War yet?
No, she's been working all the time.
You know,
all the time.
Hi. Sometimes you make life choices, and I don't know. Sometimes when those life choices mean you can't go see Civil War, you gotta reevaluate.
Can we put this all on pause and come back to it in a minute?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, and one of the parts that, I mean, I'm trying to say it was surprising. I don't know, maybe surprising in things I like. Just keep on going over. Like, it's an overlap sometimes, I guess. Because this is definitely a pleasant surprise, but, you know, normally when a lot of movies have this many characters, it's really easy for so many of them to just be, you know, to be background, to be paintings on the wall and not really have anything to do. And so I was pleased / surprised / whatever you want to call it that this actually gave all of the costumed characters, it gave them moments. Every single person in there got a moment that you felt like you got to see their personality, see them shine a little bit, something memorable to do. And with a cast this large, that's really impressive.
Yeah, there was lots of really good, just basic, like, I keep coming back to the term, like, it was well-crafted.
Yes.
Like, there was lots of scenes that were character scenes where you learn something about the characters, but also there was good exposition inserted into those scenes, and the plot was moved forward. One thing that I was surprised by, and also very pleasantly surprised by, because I expected it to be different after watching Age of Ultron, is the only direct acknowledgement of the overarching MCU Infinity Gauntlet plot was Vision tapping his gem.
Yeah, and kind of just reminding people, like, oh, it's
just a quick reminder, like, hey, I've got this thing. I don't know what it does. It came from Loki's staff, but it makes me feel really strange and weird as I am a robot. And I was like, that's great. That's almost some, like, Avatar The Last Airbender level exposition, where you have to give us the exposition, but you're using it to tell us something about the character who's speaking.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and if someone watched this movie and comes out of it not wanting the Vision Scarlet Witch romantic comedy, then I'm not sure if I trust that person to have humanity.
oh man, I was so excited. This was unexpected. I didn't expect to get to see it, but that little tiny little glimpse of Wakanda that we got to see.
Yes,
I was like beside myself. I was like, oh my god, it's happening.
And even just little things like one of T'Challa's bodyguards being, you know, the really strong looking shaved head woman. That's straight out of the comics. She's one of the Dora Milaje. And kind of like that was introduced in the was it early 2000s, late 90s, like Christopher Priest Black Panther comics. And just to have that there, just like, you know, yes, he is protected in a way by his quasi-betrothed people, because that's one ways of keeping, you know, pleasantries between the different factions of Wakanda and yada, 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 yada. And, you know, they didn't go into all of that minutia, but it's just like, there it is. He has strong women as bodyguards. Bam.
Mm-hmm. I also loved how casual they were about establishing the, like, his influence and technological might.
Yep.
When he just straight up rolled up in his Black Panther wing jet at the end, I was like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Love it.
Because, you know, why not? Why not? Of course he has a special jet as Black Panther. And, you know, and I like the fact that, again, we're seeing this. This is something did we talk about this in Winter Soldier? But Marvel is just doing a great job of being like, there you go. Because of course you have it. And I'm thinking about, like, we don't get a long explanation, an unnecessary explanation of, like, wait, how did T'Challa get a Panther suit? What? That doesn't, like, no, he has it. He has a superhero costume already ready to go because he's the freaking Black Panther monarch of Wakanda. If you need more than that, I don't know. Wait for his movie. It'll be there.
I mean, he got pushed back for the Spider-Man movie, but whatever. I mean, I'm sure it'll be fun. I'm fine. But I've had plenty of Spider-Man movies. I haven't had any Black Panther movies.
True, true.
Or Captain Marvel movies.
True, true.
Okay, this is just turning into a litany of worship.
Yeah.
What can we criticize?
We talked about the name, right?
Constructively. What can we constructively criticize about the film?
Now, does this count as a constructive criticism or just kind of fanboy belly aching?
Come see, come saw.
Okay. We have Zemo.
Mm-hmm.
And although I do like that Zemo's ultimate plot, his ultimate scheme, was a small one. It wasn't blow up the world. It wasn't, you know, turn all the humans into mutants, whatever it was. It was, he's going to use information and the proof that he has to turn the Avengers against themselves so that they destroy, set upon each other.
Yes.
But at the same time, it almost feels that yet again, we have a character, a villain, who is not that charismatic.
I'll agree with that.
Yeah. That, you know,
he's no Robert Redford.
He's no Robert Redford. He's no Tom Hiddleston. And, well, Ultron wasn't really memorable at the end of the day for me, but
I mean, I enjoyed him, especially when I started thinking about,
well, Ultron, in a lot of ways, or...
no, not Ultron. That's a whole other podcast. Yeah, yeah. We can do Ultron
later.
But no, Zemo in this movie, how they did him, because I started thinking about how, in a lot of ways, he is the same idea of a villain that Lex Luthor is in the Batman versus Superman film.
Yeah.
Done much, much stranger and much, much worse, obviously.
Yeah.
But the idea of a single human being calling these godlike beings to task, and with nothing more than wit and guile, kind of defeating them, like, depending how you view the end of the film.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of, and it's much more subtle in this film. But especially with that last little moment where they ask him how he feels that he's lost, and he says something to the effect of, did I? You know, whatever.
I don't remember the meaning, but...
Yeah, exactly. But I thought it was not. It was very subtle, but I liked that. I liked that the scope of this film felt very earthbound and mortal and real.
And you know, I do as well, but at the same time, just looking at him just as a villain and as a character, his plot and the movie's execution of that plot was highly memorable. And you know, and this is not to say the actor did a bad job. I think he did fine with what he was given, but mm-hmm. you know, no one's really going to take away, except for maybe that like did I bit, no one's going to take away any favorite Zemo moments.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
I have to go start the Zemo fandom just to spite you.
God! You know, and which kind of, you know, makes me wonder on the fanboy side of things of, because Baron Zemo is, yeah, I mean, he's a middle to like low high tier villain, depending on how he's being used at the time, of course. He's kind of a big deal in the world of Cap, and to kind of have him, that name, go to a character that may honestly just disappear at the end of this movie, you know, it kind of feels wasteful. I guess it really depends on how much they're going to bring up this villain again in later movies, or is it going to be kind of like, hey, we used Red Skull once, and now we're never going to do anything with Red Skull again?
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think they'd be cool. It's cool they left him alive.
Yes.
So they can bring him back and maybe, you know, slowly work him towards something like his comic book incarnation. But, yeah.
Yeah, and if they do that, if they are playing a bit more long game, then I think there's definitely places where they can redeem. If not even redeem, but they can more enhance Zemo in later movies. But just looking at this one, it would have been nice to have a characterization of the villain be as memorable as his overall plot. Which I guess sometimes, now that I think about it, like, that's almost the opposite of what we've had in a lot of superhero movie villains, where their characterization may be quite solid. But overall, plot-wise, you know, it's kind of like, well, that's a rather silly plot.
I'll turn everyone into mutants, and then they'll know what it's like to be mutants, and then they'll die 10 minutes later.
You're such a magnificent bastard, I want to... Hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense! Curse you and your royal Shakespearean acting prowess! You had me rooting for the bullshit you called a plan!
What a terrible plan, Magneto.
Somewhere, Zemo is just shaking his head going, but I had a good idea. So what
maybe else? They just didn't have enough money. Like, after paying everyone else's salary, they're like, okay, we got, like, scale to get the villain... call Jeff. Is Jeff free? Jeff, you're Zemo. Come on, you're in the movie. He's like, do I have to get a haircut or anything? Nah, man, just wear your normal clothes. It's fine.
I like the idea that they had everything going. Like, all right, we spent all our money. We never did the Zemo mask. What do you mean Zemo mask? Just cut two eye holes in a towel and throw it up. Just go find a doily. That's what's... Do you have a purple doily in your house? That's the Zemo mask. Like, well, we could do that. Can we at least CG the doily?
I enjoyed the movie so much, but I think if I'm going to give it a criticism, I think... I mean, I guess I understand why they did it, but it felt really unnecessary to reassure us twice in the film directly that Bucky and Steve are not gay.
I think I might have missed that.
Well, of course you did with your straight white male gaze, Brent Thomas. Is there something
you're telling us, Derek? Are you outing yourself?
Gender is performative, Brent. What can I say? No, they went out of their way twice to have a moment to establish that, oh, he's kissing the girl, okay. And then the moment right before they go into Act 3 of like, hey, remember that time that we were dating girls very heterosexually? Yes, I do, Steve. ha, clap on the shoulder. Let's go punch a dude.
Yeah, I'll grant you the remember.
It felt like too much of them being really aware of how people feel about Steve and Bucky and their relationship online, and wanting to kind of wall that off a little bit. Because before the movie came out, the Russo brothers and most of the press about the movie gave some really interesting feedback on that, where they were like, you know, if you want to view the relationship between these two characters as being romantic, that is great. If you want to view it that way, we don't view it that way ourselves. We've always viewed it as brotherhood, best friends for life, all that kind of stuff. But we don't want to tell you that you can't view it that way, so that you can see yourself as these characters. That's great. But then, like I said, it didn't bother me, because of course, you know, I'm not gay, so it's not going to bother me. Mm. But I did notice it. Like, it felt like, okay, one time we get it, two times, okay, someone was concerned, either in the writer, studio level, producer level, that kind of thing. Someone really wanted to nail that down.
Well, now here's a question for you, because I can definitely fully endorse I still love this phrase, the case of the not gays.
In case of the not gays. That was the phrase I was looking for. Thank you.
I'll fully back you up on the like, remember that time you were dancing with girls? Huh? Huh?
I know, because they could have picked any story. Yeah. Any story from their childhood. But, okay.
Nope, dancing with girls.
Remember that time we were not gay?
Totally. Yeah, sure. It was fantastic being not gay. I'll fully support you on that one. I got your back. But
right.
Now I think, and you know, this might be a little bit of just point of view, but I was thinking with the Sharon Carter moment of since that relationship has of course it does have its roots in the comics and things like that, but it's also been something that was a B plot, possibly a C plot, of Winter Soldier, and then here.
I completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree.
So now I guess that would be one of my critiques of the movie. I think it could have had more Sharon Carter in it. I thought Sharon Carter, like, I like that she was the kind of the person on the inside feeding them information, but there wasn't that much of that. There was only like, what, one scene, two scenes where she kind of kept them abreast of things. And then for a script that was usually fairly smart and manning to, like you said, deliver exposition in a non-heavy-handed way, the funeral scene where she's like, and that's why I never told anyone she was my aunt, and people are just finding out for the first time right now she's my aunt. Yeah. And by the way, she's my aunt, and no one knew. Like, I was like, wow, that's really clumsy. And that outside of that scene and the delivering the information scene, Sharon Carter never really had much to do. So I think that would be probably one of the main stumbles for me in the movie.
Which, like I said, they were spinning so many plates so well that if a few are going to fall off, and that's, I can understand that. That's
fine. And you know, I mean, that's the same thing I feel like. Like, I'll allow it, but it is one of those, like, here's one of the plates that kind of got chipped.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it didn't make me hate the movie. It didn't destroy the movie for me. But woulda, coulda, shoulda, a little bit more Sharon Carter.
I wonder if there's more deleted scenes with her.
Oh, now I've lust after the extras.
It made me so sad when Peggy Carter died.
Yeah.
And I'm still not finished with season two of Agent Carter. Like, I've got like a few more episodes left. So now I'm like, oh no, now I mean, I'm... I know she's old and stuff, but now that she's officially dead in the future of the MCU canon, it's like, oh.
And after they I hear they canceled the ideas of doing the third season. Now, I know this is a whatchamajig, a Captain America one, but yeah, but about the Agent Carter, I'll admit I watched like the first two or three episodes of the season one, mm-hmm. and I don't know, like, there was something. Okay, so you've watched Mad Men, right?
No.
You haven't watched Mad Men. Okay, then this is going to be a much harder analogy. There's Mad Men, tonally, is about, you know, it's about the 60s, it's about that generation, and it unapologetically deals with the sexism and racism inherent with the basic ideas and values of that generation. In a way where it's there, and it's, I don't know, it feels like it's not kind of celebrating them, it's showing them, but in a way they kind of like, yeah, every now and then I'm in favor of these people, but they're still dickheads in many ways. And from the first two or three episodes I remember watching of Agent Carter, I really wanted to enjoy it, but it almost seemed like it took the misogynist attitudes and sexist attitudes of the time and just kind of turned it almost into a cartoon. Am I just going way too far afield for a Captain America?
No, I get what you're saying. It might be a little far afield from the topic of the podcast.
You know, I mean, I figure, well, we're never going to have a long conversation about Agent Carter, so people can deal with like a 5-7 minute thing, especially if you can be like, dude, watch the whole thing. It turns out better.
At the beginning of the first season, it is very heavy-handed. But I think if you finish the first season and go on to the second season, just in the first season, I think it's very heavy-handed and it's very noticeable, and I'll agree, it's almost a caricature. But I think once you get further into the season, you realize that it's almost caricatured and it's really heavy-handed because they want to make sure you feel it, the frustration of it, the way that Peggy did.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it's way simplified because it's on TV and it's a freaking comic book show. And it's not the same level of writers that are working on Mad Men, even though I haven't seen the show. I know it's brilliant and genius and all that kind of stuff. But it's basically when you see the attitudes towards her change throughout the season.
Okay.
And like her attitude towards other people and other people's attitude towards her and how it evolves, and also it makes you get like, man, I'm sick of people telling Peggy she doesn't know what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, it happens over and over and it's really ham-fisted, but that's kind of their brief. That's what they're trying to get across. Season, they change locale. She goes out to California, and it's much more like L.A. Confidential with superheroes and punching and intrigue, you know, so it's not as ham-fisted in the second season.
Okay. Then I will thus table the conversation here, because it is a Captain America one, but that was one of the things that made me go like, this kind of got pushed down on my list, but hearing that does kind of make me want to start it up, because I like the idea of the Carters.
Yeah, stick with it. It's definitely worth sticking with, especially for the side characters like Jarvis and Dottie and a couple of the others. Like, there's some good stuff. There's some really good stuff as that season goes on. And season two, I'm like halfway through, is also really, really fun.
Nice. So back to Captain America.
So Team Cap, Team Iron Man. Team Iron Man, Team Cap. Which are you?
Team Cap.
Team Cap.
Team Cap. I think they, and I guess that would be kind of one of my little quibbles about the movie as well, is I think the kind of summation of the argument is, when Cap kind of had that bit of, well, what happens when they want us to get involved with something that we don't feel we need to be involved in, or what happens when we want to go somewhere that the UN doesn't sanction us? There's lots of things going on in the world that the UN doesn't get the vote of going, and having something relying on that vote would greatly slow down the power of it. And although, admittedly, they are kind of extra legal vigilantes in a way, they are also a non-political group. They can go after things that, you know, uncolored by politics. And then I think one of the arguments that, even though it kind of got brought up when Steve was talking to Wanda, I don't think this made its way into the actual main argument between Tony and Steve, was with maybe the exception of the Ultron thing, because Tony created Ultron, with the exception of that, all the incidents they brought up, the helicarriers, the things in the alien attack on New York where the Avengers cost lives, like, well, actually, they were saving lives. And
if they'd done nothing, thousands and thousands more of people would have died, right?
Yeah, and that was the kind of thing of, like, I don't, why is no one saying that? Like, they do such a great job of lampshading some of the silliness of the movie to make us enjoy it, but why aren't they lampshading the idea of, like, we save New York? Sure, unfortunately, some people were still hurt, but we save New York. I mean, you could argue in part of the Avengers movie, they show Captain America taking of the police officers he found and making them more effective.
You know why?
Why?
Ghostbusters 2. It's always Ghostbusters 2.
With
heroes always get blamed.
Okay. I'm just thinking about the Statue of Liberty walking mm-hmm. through New York.
Yeah.
Thanks to Jackie Wilson.
It's awesome.
I stand by Ghostbusters 2. Stand
I like
by
that
it.
Movie.
It's
we,
fun.
That should be our next like commentary.
Let's do it.
Let's watch Ghostbusters 2 and talk about it.
Just Ghostbusters 2, or do we do why would we do Ghostbusters? Everyone knows Ghostbusters.
Yeah, no, let's do Ghostbusters 2.
Here's my entire commentary of Ghostbusters. This movie's so good. Just take that, space it out anywhere between 5 and 30 seconds for the hour and a half at last. That's my commentary.
Yeah, if people like it, we can do a whole series of, like, maligned sequels that people say are bad, and we can watch them and adjudicate.
I want to do it for a Super Mario Brothers the movie.
Okay.
It's all great. Right. Should we just go ahead and start talking a lot about Spider-Man and then call it a day?
Yeah, let's talk about let's talk about the elephant in the room. Let's talk about Spider-Man.
Spider-Man!
I thought he was really great. I thought his suit looked very CGI and weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he was like a cartoon character.
He was.
But I did like there was a throwaway line somewhere in the fight about, it's just a prototype. You know, something to that effect. So they could totally redo the look for his movie if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And like they went ahead and just referenced the fact that Marissa Tomei is way too smoking hot to be playing Aunt May in a Spider-Man movie.
Marissa Tomei. You know, when she was in, was it Untamed Heart, the movie with her and Kristen Slater? Huge crush. Little kid. Oh, man. She's to quote from the Phantom, to steal from the Phantom Menace, is she an angel?
Oh, God.
I hate sand.
No, I thought they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They were like, okay, here's what he's like. He's quippy. They finally had a Spider-Man that quips and is funny.
Yeah.
In a way that they made him very youthful, which I really, really liked. It's basically like they made lots of promises for what his movie is going to be like.
Yes. I'll admit, I was one of the people who was going to have another high school movie. I was kind of like, well, I'm not against it, but,
mm-hmm.
well, the other two movies have been started in high school, and they just haven't felt like high school. But after seeing this kid, what's his name? Tom Holland. and the voice they gave him and Spidey. You know what? Let's do it. Let's have the whole movie 10th grade Spider-Man. I want that.
Do his origin in 10 seconds and then just go right to hijinks.
You know, or just let's put an asterisk right there at the beginning of the movie for the origin of Spider-Man exist in the world of today. Like, if you don't know Spider-Man's origin, go see a doctor.
Yeah. I'm curious, when they do his movie, is it going to be, like, is it supposed to be, like, post-Civil War Spider-Man, where he has access to Avengers-level technology to make all his webby stuff?
I don't know
how to go. I'd really like to see a little section of the movie of him, like, with his crappy suit and his new web shooters and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, because I've heard rumors that Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in the Spider-Man movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which, you know, like, that was one of the things that really struck me about the movie, is when it's Spidey and Cap fighting, mm-hmm. that ideologically Spider-Man is on Cap's side. He just doesn't know it.
Right.
And that really, I gotta be honest, as fun as Iron Man is, if I got to see Captain America and Spider-Man hanging out rather than Iron Man and Spider-Man, I would totally take Cap. Team Cap, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I want Captain America to be Spider-Man's mentor. And then I want Falcon and Bucky to show up, and I want Falcon to keep giving Bucky the side eye, and because that was great.
Because, yeah, act even more like, look, I've been dating Steve for a while. Look, Falcon.
Hey, me and Steve, hey, I'm Falcon. Me and Steve, remember that time we went after girls? Remember?
Remember that time I made my super suit look just like Steve's? With some goggles.
Okay, so now we're getting into some what is it, Bridget Fonda single white female stuff here. I think I'm no longer comfortable.
I'm just saying there was a lot of tension in that VW Bug.
I'm saying hurry up and make them not gay, please.
It makes me uncomfortable. But yeah, Spider-Man. Was super fun and had no homoerotic tension with anyone. And oh man, I love his zingers were great. I'm excited about him.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's really impressive to me when, like I said, that was a multiple billion dollar thing they were doing.
Mm.
You know, like the Spider-Man franchise is billions of dollars.
Yes.
And to execute it in a way that didn't feel like the weight of corporations and the earth itself. Like that, it felt fresh and fun and new.
Yeah,
was really impressive.
Yeah, that they've realized, or I guess maybe Marvel always knew that Spider-Man is a light, funny character who has those cracks of always wanting to do the right thing, but you know Spider-Man is at heart a kid, so you have to have those kid vibes in there, and they did it perfectly here. Like,
yeah, I'm very excited to have him home so he can be on board for Infinity Gauntlet. He's one of my favorite part of that stories.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he's the one that, like, I am so out of my league, but I'm going to keep fighting because human spirit is dauntless.
It's what we do.
Right.
Man. Now, I'll tell you, I guess probably the biggest way to wrap up how good I thought Civil War was, is at the end of Civil War, it really made me want to go back and watch Age of Ultron to see if there's little, like, what was in Age of Ultron? Like, is Zemo there? Can we see Zemo? Maybe there's Zemo in it.
Yeah. Yeah, where it makes the crappy movie seem better retroactively.
Yes, exactly.
It's an impressive feat.
It really is. Have we just slobbered all over this movie enough? Do we need to say any more?
No, we can't say anymore. We would just embarrass ourselves at this point.
It, you know, because I mean it's so pretty, and the way the light shines through the hair of anyone.
I want to reward it with all the money.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you did it. You did it right. You made it well. I want to give you more money and reward you so you make more things like this.
Yeah, I mean, I live in an area where seeing a movie is usually a minimum $20 investment, and I want to go see it again. And I'm cheap. I'm incredibly cheap. Mm-hmm. But this, if you haven't, oh. Now, I guess that is one more thing we can talk about, and then we'll just let it go. Then we'll just let it go. Is okay. One of the criticisms I've heard, and we kind of touched on this, is that there are too many tone shifts in the movie. That it goes from the kind of fun adventure superhero fight time to something that was probably more appropriate for. For what would you call it? For Winter Soldier, where they kind of, where you know, someone said this is Marvel putting their foot into the grim dark world.
See, I feel like that type of criticism is someone who just wants to find something to sound smart about.
Mm.
Like it's not wrong; it's obviously correct, but it's all about the overriding premise. Like it's like so what? Like yeah, there's tone shifts. There's tone shifts at a rock show. Mm. There's tone shifts in symphonies. Mm. Like, so what? Like, they're not inherently bad. They're not necessarily a flaw. Mm. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I don't care. I felt entertained.
Mm.
Like, you know, so it's one of those, like, I see this thing that is some people could perceive as being a flaw for cinema. So I'm going to harp on it. So I have a nice book clickbaity title for my blog post.
Mm-mm. I'm there with you. Like, I just kind of thought that same thing of like, yeah, but sometimes that's having the kind of shifts of tone serves as a little bit of a palate cleanser. And also, when you have a lot of fun with these guys, like, you know, we've kind of talked about the kind of love triangle between Sam, Steve, and Bucky, and mm-hmm. kind of seeing that, like, that kind of fun between them, I think when we actually have those, like, heavy scenes of oh, goodness, is Bucky actually a villain at some point? It kind of, since we've had fun with the character, it makes the heaviness that also comes with him more powerful.
It's also like, what are you comparing it to? All those other films that have 19 superheroes and 8 years of related films all trying to keep a cohesive movie universe going?
Oh, like, dime a dozen of those.
Yeah, all those other films, like the one or two other that have ever existed yeah. that you're comparing it to? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. It's, yeah, if, I don't know, I don't think I would enjoy this movie as much if it only had, if it was monotonal.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go see it again. I want to eat some more popcorn. I want to give them my money. I'm excited about the next story they want to tell me. The next stories, plural,
yeah.
they want to tell me.
Yeah.
Like, they did it right. That's my 2-second review.
Yeah. And that's me as well. Like any negative stuff that I feel we brought up in this movie is us kind of going on that journey of, well, what are things that we can critique? What are things that keep this from being the perfect holy grail of a movie? I mean, when one of the biggest out of the gate complaints of the movie is, it probably shouldn't have been called Captain America Civil War. It should have been called Avengers Civil War. Like if the title is kind of given equal weight of the critiques of the movie, then it kind of shows that's what you're having to scrape to get to real critiques.
Exactly.
Yeah. In a 2.5-hour movie, there was maybe 5 minutes of clumsiness.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'd call it a piece of crap. What about you?
Yeah, garbage.
Don't.
Two stars.
Boo. Okay, I'm going to end the podcast so I can go see it again.
Okay, bye.
Bye.